Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 1-800-NOW-OPEN or open.com.
I have to ask you, Congressman Murtha, were you a McGovernite in 1972?
I am now.
And with that, we begin a special hour of our program, a special edition of our 2006 election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days, Issue 18, Should We Get Out of Iraq? And for this question, so central to our nation right now, we will air extended excerpts from the public event I moderated on the question earlier this month at Town Hall in Manhattan. This event was organized by Harper's Magazine, co-sponsored by WNYC, and built around a new book called Out of Iraq, A Practical Plan for Withdrawal Now, published by Simon & Schuster, and by former senator and Democratic presidential nominee from 1972, George McGovern, and former Kennedy and Johnson administration Middle East expert, William Polk. For an opposing view, we also invited Heritage Foundation Defense Fellow James Carafano, who also was in the Army and taught at West Point for many years, and Jordanian journalist Salomon Nemat of the newspaper Al Hayat. And with control of Congress hanging in the balance right now, we also invited the leading voice for a quick exit from Iraq, Democratic Congressman Jack Murtha. Murtha began by explaining why he went from supporter of the Iraq War to arguing that we have nothing more to gain there.
Our military did as good a job as it can do, but there's a limitation to military power. And I've learned that in the years that I've been in Washington. And when I spoke out for two reasons. I go to the hospitals every week to see these young men and women who have been wounded so badly and talk to them and see the difference between when they started and their attitude today. And second is the fact that our military is being disassembled. It worries me that we don't have in the United States any strategic reserve, that only a few combat brigades are prepared to deter any major conflict. We couldn't deploy our forces. I predicted all this because I could see with the small volunteer army we have, we couldn't sustain a long deployment. Some of these folks are going back in less than a year, and they should spend 2 years at home in a year. And some of you know people like that. Some of you know relatives that go back year after year, and a tremendous strain on them. And, of course, the credibility of this country, according to the polls, has been destroyed by what happened to Abu Ghraib because of insufficient forces, what happened at Fallujah when we put 300,000 people outside their homes. All those things contributed to the loss of confidence of the world in the way we operate. And then we started to mess with the Geneva Convention. And I saw, and so I knew that I needed to speak out against what I felt was a policy. In the past, I was always able to do this quietly behind the scenes. I've been involved in almost every major decision that was made in the White House and the Congress in the 32 years I've been in Congress. But I couldn't get through to them. I mean, it was like talking to the wall. Nobody paid attention. They just kept saying everything's all right, everything's getting better. And I would say to my staff, how do you measure progress in Iraq? 60% unemployment. We have electricity's below pre-war level, oil production below pre-war level, and incidents have increased from 400 just a year ago to 800. We had the bloodiest month for Iraqis in July and August, and yet they keep saying, stay the course. We're going to have to get out of Iraq either next week or the week after that. We have to redeploy. I've been looking, and I want to listen in interest to Senator McGovern's plan, because I am absolutely convinced that we have to find a rational way to redeploy out of Iraq as quickly as possible.
Senator McGovern, begin to lay it out for us. Out of Iraq is the title of your book. How?
What we have done in this little book is spell out a step-by-step plan of how this can be accomplished in roughly 6 months' time with minimum damage to Iraq and minimum damage to the United States in our interests. We don't buy this cut-and-run nonsense. Nobody's asking for a race to the border. We'll put our troops out of that country in the same deliberate way that we put them in, I hope with a lot more deliberation, because they were rushed in there under falsehoods, a whole string of them. We were supposed to have found weapons of mass destruction imminently threatening to the United States. That's a lot of nonsense, as we now know. We were also told we were going to deliver democracy to the people of Iraq. You can do a lot with military power, but you can't drop it out of a bomber. I'm an old bomber pilot, and I know some of the things it can do and some of the things it can't. You can't do it with well-trained troops who aren't prepared in the knowledge of how to set up a government in somebody else's country. So we believe that systematically bringing our troops home from Iraq is in the interest of the United States. It's certainly in the interest of our troops. It's certainly in the interest of our standing in the eyes of the rest of the world. And we believe if it is accompanied by an effort to rebuild Iraq, it will be in the interest of the people of Iraq.
Dr. Polk, for the benefit of people who haven't read the article or the book, I'm going to do my broadcast journalist thing and summarize part of the 24-point plan, and I'm going to ask you to tell me what it all adds up to. Because when you say the U.S. withdraws, you really mean withdraw. You would include moving the U.S. embassy out of Baghdad. You would include cessation of any construction of permanent U.S. military bases. You would include the withdrawal of what you call 25,000 mercenaries from the so-called security firms. And you call for the release of all prisoners of war in Iraq and the shutting down of all detention centers and even paying Iraq reparations. What, sir, does it all add up to?
What we've been trying to do is to recognize the realities of the problems we face. I have had the experience of following closely and being very closely involved in other guerrilla wars. I was head of the American Task Force on the Algerian War, and I watched the process of disengagement. It always results in a considerable amount of chaos. We have to recognize that that's the case. With 140,000 troops in Iraq, we haven't been able to prevent chaos. We certainly can't prevent chaos in the transition to the removal of American power. But there are certain things that we can do that will make that transition far easier. And one of the key factors that we have been advocating is the creation of a stability force under the United Nations, made up of perhaps 15,000 people from various other countries suitable or acceptable to the Iraqis, armed with small arms and with the mission only of keeping a minimal amount of public security for perhaps 2 years. What we've done in this plan all the way along is to indicate a timetable, an estimate of the possibility of success, an identification of what the dangers are, and to compare the cost of what we were advocating with the cost of not doing anything in Iraq. For example, the stability force, we estimate, would cost something on the order of $500 a day per man, an awful lot of money, roughly $6 billion over a period of 2 years. But it's important to recognize that that is approximately 2% of the current cost of trying to do the same job with American forces. So we would save somewhere between $200 and $300 billion on that particular item. During that period of time, we also think that it would be important to help the Iraqis in a number of ways to reestablish the elements of their own control over their own society. The police force is the most important. and we advocate an attempt to help them move in that direction. We don't advocate the recreation of an Iraqi army. We're now spending $2.2 billion to do that. And as a historian who spent a lot of time in Baghdad, I first went there in 1946, I have seen that the army in Iraq was a major detriment to the creation of civic institutions. So we don't think that this is an appropriate thing to do. Indeed, in the various guerrilla wars that I have studied closely, the attempt to create stability before sovereignty has never worked. Sovereignty always has to come before stability. And that's the main element of our advocating getting out of Iraq. As long as Americans are there as targets, there will certainly be no stability created.
Congressman Murtha, what do you think of their plan, as much of you've read of it or heard of it just now, including the idea of a UN stability force to replace our forces?
I read the excerpts of the plan on the way up here in the plane, and I don't think the Congress will be in the mood for the reconstruction part of it. I remember speaking on the floor about reconstruction. I said the most important part of the $87 billion that we passed initially was the reconstruction part. I think it costs much more than $25 billion. I don't think in the end that it's practical to be able to do that. I understand why it should be done. I understand that much of what's happening, that we've destroyed it. But I just don't think that's practical. Also, I think the Iraqis have to settle this themselves. I have to say that I listen, but I am absolutely convinced that the people that want us in there are al-Qaeda. The people that want us in there are the ones that are fighting with each other. And as long as we're there, we're going to be actually helping them recruit people against us. I see with 130,000 people, 130,000 troops, and incidents getting worse. I keep saying over and over again, 130,000 people on the ground, and incidents have doubled per week since we've been there. The fact that we have no transition to peace, we didn't have the troops for that, and even if we'd have had the troops, I'm not sure it would have worked. I think the Iraqis have to settle it themselves. I hate to disagree, because some of the things we've already put in legislation, no permanent bases. I agree there shouldn't be a problem. They should close the prisons. They should, many of the things you recommend. But I just don't think the Congress would be in a mood. It's costing us $8 billion a month right now in Iraq. And it would only cost $8 billion. 1 month of that would take care of what they would like to do. But I'll tell you the truth, I just don't think it's going to happen. My experience is, listen to CIA, listen to the intelligence reports, they've got to work this out themselves. I don't see any way that there's any particular plan that parts of this plan should be implemented, no question about it, but I just don't see that we can settle it for them. Partition, I've seen the partition plan. Maybe they have to do that. They're going to have to do that themselves. The United States cannot force any kind of plan on the Iraqis. The Iraqis are going to have to settle this themselves. And I just one bit of history. We didn't address slavery in the original Constitution in 1789. We let it go. We said, no, we wouldn't form a country if we addressed slavery. So we waited till the Civil War, which my grandfather or great-grandfather fought in, and that happened some years later. They're going to have to settle this themselves. As terrible as that sounds and as tragic as it is, we've become the enemies. Our troops are caught in a civil war that's going on right now, but the Iraqis have to settle it themselves.
Congressman, could I comment?
Senator McGovern, please.
You know, if there's anything that Bill Polk and I agree 100% with is what Congressman Murtha has just said. He hasn't had a chance yet to read this book, although it's a brief one that I hope all of you will read. But the last thing we want is for America to continue taking charge of Iraq. There isn't anything we propose here that we don't want to have done by the people that live in Iraq. What we are saying is that country has suffered so grievously from the American invasion that we do have some obligations financially to assist them in reconstruction. But we would certainly agree with the congressman's warning that it would not be withdrawal from Iraq if we continue to try to run the show, even the rehabilitation of the country. We're simply suggesting certain things that we think would ease the pain of the destruction this war has caused. If you read these points one by one, there isn't one of them that enhances America's meddling or its power to control events in Iraq. One of the reasons we advocate withdrawal is that we think we owe it to the people of Iraq, who are now probably at least 3 out of 4, and I think higher than that, in favor of getting this foreign army, which happens to be ours, with some modest help from the British, to get those military forces out of their country, and then do what we can without meddling to pay some of the cost of rebuilding that devastated country.
Dr. Polk, very briefly.
Just one very quick point. I understand Congressman Northa's objection to asking the American public to spend more money, but it's the summary of our plan is a cost of something like 3% of what it will cost us not to do it. That is to say, the total amount of money that we're advocating included in this plan is approximately $13 billion. This year, we're spending a little over $100 billion. The estimate of the Congressional Research Center that deals with government spending is something on the order of a rise of cost of 30% a year, so that if we don't do something like this plan, and we all recognize that this is a first draft and something on the table to shoot at, we will be involved in spending upwards of $400 to $500 billion. So this is a way of saving America money as well as using the money more effectively.
Let me just say, we've spent $962 billion in the last 9 months for defense. $962 billion. In the war itself, it's $500 billion. That's just the war cost. So there's no question about it would be if we could work it out. The problem, the practical problem I see, and I'm interested in what they're saying, because almost all the things that they've suggested are something that I would agree with. But I'm just not sure that the practical problem, we can help them rebuild until they get to some stability. That's the thing that worries me.
Extended excerpts there from the Harper's Magazine WNYC public event at Town Hall. Should we get out of Iraq? We'll continue in a minute with the panelists who argued the other side, and then the dialogue among all five of them, including more from Senator McGovern and Congressman Murtha. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. It's our 2006 election series, 30 issues in 30 days. Coming up in the series tomorrow, issue 19, will your vote be counted? Friday, issue 20, whose moral values? With Congressman Barney Frank and others. Right now, we continue with our special edition for today, issue 18, should we get out of Iraq? Extended excerpts from the event I moderated at Town Hall, built on the new book by George McGovern and William Polk, Out of Iraq, and the related article in the October issue of Harper's Magazine. We heard the proponents of withdrawal. Now we'll hear a response from Dr. James Carafano, 25 years with the Army in West Point, now with the conservative think tank The Heritage Foundation, and after that from Jordanian journalist Salome Nemat of the newspaper Al Hayat. Dr. Carafano, Mr. Nemat, thank you for your patience. Dr. Carafano, why not?
Well, first of all, I want to say I feel very comfortable sitting in the center. The second thing I want to do is criticize the Harpers, because I think they, quite frankly, framed this event wrong and brought you here on false pretenses. Should we get out of Iraq? You know, quite honestly, you know, living and breathing this debate every day in Washington for the last several years, I actually have a tough time of thinking of any credible analyst, security analyst, either on the right or the left, who thinks that the United States should stay in Iraq over the long term. And, you know, you frequently hear this kind of range of options of the let's get out now regardless of the consequences and the events on the ground. And quite frankly, nobody's really making that argument. I mean, Senator McGovern and Mr. Polk aren't making that argument. They're arguing for doing something in a disciplined, organized way. On the other hand, you hear that you do occasionally hear somebody saying, "Well, geez, we just need to put more people on the ground and fight this counterinsurgency." And that, quite frankly, is a wildly impractical option. The United States military doesn't have the forces and couldn't get enough allies to do a sustained counterinsurgency campaign in Iraq. It would take years to make it successful. You wouldn't like what the country looked like when you got done. Where you have successfully suppressed insurgencies over the long term, and people hold these up as models of success, they're really not very happy places like Kenya and Algeria. So that's really not a practical option on the table. And I think really most of us are really in the middle, which is saying that, you know, how do we withdraw major military forces from Iraq in a disciplined way? And I just want to make two points, and they're this: is one is how you leave Iraq matters. And there are five consequences, I think, of leaving Iraq in the wrong way that people need to think about. One, and I'll just run through them very nice, they all have alliteration. Armies, energy, allies, al-Qaeda, and average citizens. To have a civil war, you have to have an army. There's only two armies in Iraq. The coalition has one, the Iraqis have the other. We built it. If we left tomorrow, what could likely happen is each of the major ethnic groups, the Kurds, the Shias, and the Sunnis, would grab a piece of that army. They would have an army to fight with, and you would almost guarantee a civil war. The second one is energy. Iraq is, as we pointed out, their production's down. They're a marginal producer. Marginal production does make a big difference in the world we are today. Iran is being very aggressive, in large part because their oil revenues are way up, in large part because the United States is having trouble in Iraq. Saudi Arabia is really looking at ramping up production, as are a lot of other people in the world. And stability in production right now and getting to the higher levels of production over the next couple of years is going to make a big difference. So quite frankly, the longer Iraq remains stable and the longer it continues to produce and the stability it provides will make a difference in terms of global energy supplies. The other one is allies. I mean, I think this is the one point that really doesn't get discussed enough. The war in Iraq is changing. The enemy, who is the enemy when we invaded Iraq against Saddam, is not the enemy we're facing today. What most concerns people today is, and I think the most of the trouble really contains, is Iran is actively seeking to bog, as al-Qaeda had tried, and I think largely failed to really mount a really successful insurgency. And I really think that al-Qaeda has been in the decline since 2003. Iran has really looked at Iraq as an opportunity to tie the Americans down, to distract the people from debating about Iran's nuclear programs in the UN Security Council. I think this also ties into the Hezbollah operations in Lebanon. And if you look at the cycle of violence over the last year, a lot of it is, I believe, Iranian-inspired, of fueling a Shia insurgency, which then reignites the Sunni insurgency, which was really started this thing of violence. People are looking in the Middle East to stop Iranian aggression, Iranian adventurism, Iranian expansionism, and they're looking to the United States to do that. So how we leave Iraq and the shape we leave Iraq in and how we treat our allies in this region is going to matter a great deal. Al-Qaeda would love to portray the U.S. withdrawal from Iraq's defeat. It's funny because actually if you look on the websites now and these things, you actually see both arguments. On one argument is that the United States is intentionally causing Iraq to melt down because they want Iraq to break up and fall apart and fail because the United States wants to keep the Arab world weak. So on the other one hand, they argue that the United States is doing this intentionally, but on the other hand, you know, they would like to see the United States withdraw from Iraq in a way that they can portray this as a defeat. And then the fourth one and the last one is average citizens, and I just think this point just doesn't get discussed enough. There's still major intermingling between all kinds of ethnic groups in the major populations area of Iraq, and these are several million people. And if this does devolve into a civil war, what's going to happen is what happens in every civil war. Populations are going to move. People are going to pick up, and they're going to move. And when they move, they're vulnerable. And what you're going to have is a humanitarian crisis, which really dwarfs Rwanda and Darfur. And I do find it amazing sometimes that people who are so vociferous about wanting to get into Darfur and also very critical of the United States for not playing a major part in Rwanda, you know, at the same time would argue, let's get out of Iraq regardless of the consequences, which would almost virtually guarantee an unprecedented humanitarian crisis. So if we may fail in Iraq, but if we leave wrong, we can guarantee failure. And I'll just finish on this point. You know, there's a great misnomer about the post-war era. you know, people talk about America, we rebuilt Europe and America rebuilt Japan and the Marshall Plan rebuilt this and rebuilt that. And none of that's really true. The people who rebuilt Europe were the Europeans. The people who rebuilt Japan are the Japanese. I mean, I think historically it's almost impossible to ever find a case of nation building where a nation went in and built in other nations. Nations rebuild themselves with brave leaders who stand up and have courage to do the right thing and by building governments that serve their people. And if the Iraqis do that, then despite their many troubles, I think the Iraqis will move forward. If they don't do that, I agree with Congressman Murtha. There's nothing amount of U.S. military power that can ever prevent the Iraqis from civil war. So we can help them not do this. We can abandon them in a way that will ensure this. But we can ensure a future that's going to make everybody happy.
Thank you very much. It's extended excerpts from our town hall event, Should We Get Out of Iraq, on WNYC. Now we're going to hear a dialogue between Murtha McGovern and others. It begins with a statement by Jordanian journalist Salome Nemet of the newspaper Al Hayat, who makes a distinction between Arab governments and the Arab people.
If we really look at what is going on there, who are the people doing the killing? Why are these people, Muslims, killing fellow Muslims? Most of the attacks are targeting other Iraqis, not the Americans. The government in Iraq today is an elected government in the freest elections in the history of the Arab world. And they have a parliament which was elected in the freest elections in the Arab world. These people are all on board with America. I agree that the majority of Iraqis, if you ask them, do you want the Americans to stay or to go, they would tell you, of course, there's nobody in the world who would accept a perpetual foreign occupation. But if you ask them, do you want them to leave now, they would tell you no way, because they know leaving now is inviting a genocide.
Thank you very much. Congressman Murtha, could I get you to react to two specific things that Dr. Carafano said, one of which Mr. Nemet also amplified. One is that a civil war would just about cause an all-out civil war, if they're not in one already, with tremendous humanitarian consequences. Mr. Nemet even used the word genocide. And two, that pulling out does not set up trust in U.S. foreign policy for other allies who might see us as cutting and running when the going gets tough.
This is what I hear the most when I talk about redeployment. But Dr. Polk in 1963 said we couldn't win in Vietnam. We lost 55,000 troops after that. When I came home in August of 67, President Lyndon Johnson said, this is over. We had a good election. Nice of you to use the election just like they're using it now. We had an election, and the war is over. Senator McGovern was way ahead of me then, when he said that we couldn't win in Vietnam. I believed to the end that the American military, it took me a long time to understand the limitation of power. I do not believe there'll be more chaos. Matter of fact, the Iraqi people don't believe there'll be more chaos. It's hard to believe there can be as much chaos as there is now. I am absolutely convinced that if we redeploy to the periphery, not desert Iraq, certainly not, and I would even vote for reconstruction money. But the point is, we're going to be forced out either today, we're going to be forced out tomorrow, just like we were out of Vietnam. And there's no way in the world that we can sustain the deployment. We don't have enough troops. You talk about a draft. Let me tell you something. You know how many voted for a draft? Two of us voted for a draft. We don't have the troops to sustain the deployment. These young people, very small percentage of young people in this country, are bearing the burden, and they're going to pay the taxes for this war in the long run.
So, Congressman Murtha, to be clear, is it your position that the only thing that we can do is let an Iraqi civil war run its course?
I believe that we have to redeploy. They're gonna have to settle it themselves, and I don't think they'll be near the carnage. The Iraqis say it won't be. The Iraqis themselves say that they'll settle this themselves. We had to have our own civil war, but I am absolutely convinced the United States staying there will not solve it, and we'll be forced to leave at some point. That's what I believe.
Senator McGovern, can I ask you to react to their specific point that It's too early to give up on the fledgling Iraqi democracy that 70% of eligible voters voted, and there is the beginning of something worth continuing to help to give birth to?
I'm all for democracy everywhere. But I think that our continued presence in Iraq is creating terrorism, not democracy. And that's the findings of the American intelligence community. It's been leaked to the New York Times and other sources. They say that we've turned Iraq, which was not a terrorist country at the time we intervened, we've now turned it into the main recruiting grounds for terrorists who see the American involvement there as a perfect foil for stepping up the terrorist pressure. Mr. Lehrer, could I just ask a question? I've been listening carefully to Mr. Nemat about how we have to stay until we've had a victory in Iraq. I wonder if he could define for us what it means to have a victory in Iraq. What does it mean to be victorious in Iraq, to lose another 50,000 young Americans and maybe 500,000 Iraqis? Is that what it's going to take to have a victory?
Mr. Nemat, he asked you.
Yes, thank you very much. Yes, I will try to define victory here. Victory here is when the Iraqi army is capable of standing on its own to defend the country against those who are trying to undermine the very project that all people in the region aspire for, the democracy. Now, again, that's why it is important. I started saying it, but I did not go on. We have to go back to the elements of the war today in Iraq. Who are we fighting in Iraq? Did anybody wonder as to how come that 90% of the suicide bombers in Iraq, the most devastating attacks that have killed mainly Iraqis, 90% of the suicide bombers are non-Iraqis? What does that tell us? Why are all these foreign jihadists going all the way from something like 15 different nations to go and fight the war against the Iraqis, against the future of Iraq, more than it is against the Americans?
Is that a corroborated figure? 90% of the suicide bombers
yes.
are non-Iraqis?
Yes, it's established by the Iraqi governments and by American sources. 90% of the suicide bombers.
Hang on.
Let me just, to be accurate, 90% of suicide bombers, not 90% of attacks, but these suicide bombers are the most devastating. In other words, the biggest number of casualties in the war in Iraq are falling as a result of the suicide bombings that are targeting Iraqis, whether they are praying in mosques or the vegetable markets or anywhere in Iraq. And so what we're fighting there is not fighting the Iraqi people. We're not fighting an Iraqi insurgency per se. There are indeed Iraqis who are fighting the remnants of Saddam Hussein's regime.
So may I jump in and get an answer to Senator McGovern's
yes,
question. What would be the definition of victory?
Okay. Definition of victory is basically making sure that America and its allies do not abandon Iraq like they did in 1991, resulting in the murder of 100,000 Iraqis by the regime. Now, this time, we're going to have something worse. Abandoning the Iraqis now means literally a genocide, because this is the American presence is the only thing standing against a genocide. Victory is not to leave until there are enough Iraqi troops, enough Iraqi police to really hold the security situation at
yes.
home. And then I think America can leave victorious, not
Mr.
defeated.
Mr. Nemat, you're a journalist. I'm going to invite you to return the favor to the McGovern-Murtha side of the table and ask them a question. Do you have one for them?
Well, the question I'd like to ask is, do you actually believe that any standing American president will ever agree, under the circumstances, to withdraw from Iraq, such as you are suggesting, considering the fact that the leading candidates or hopefuls for president in 2008 have basically moved more towards the right or to the center and not agreeing, in the majority of Congress and the Senate, not agreeing to pulling the troops immediately. Indeed, they just voted a few days to finance the war for the next year.
Well, I'm not depending on George Bush to get us out of Iraq. I think the New York Times, which most of us think is one of the better newspapers in the world, had a good editorial today in which they reminded us that when you have one party that has sweeping power, that controls the Senate, that controls the House, that has its men on the Supreme Court and its women, that controls the White House, all the cabinet posts, and they stay in power for a long period of time, it almost invites the kind of an authoritarian pattern that has developed with lots of corruption going with it. So I'm not optimistic that what Dr. Polk and I are advocating here is going to be embraced by the today's Republican Party. My mother and father were lifelong conservative Republicans, but they weren't neoconservatives, whatever the hell that is. They were conservatives who believed in a balanced budget. They believed in conserving life in this country, not risking it in unwise wars. They were the kind of conservatives that I can respect. This administration, and I go into the politics of this because we're dealing with a political problem here as much as anything. The politics are that, no, it's probably going to be very hard to sell this package that we've offered here, even though I think it's grounded in a very careful study of the historical factors, the political factors. And I don't see how anyone can escape the conclusion that has watched this development in Iraq without seeing it's not going to lead to victory.
Congressman Murtha, could I get you on the politics also? We sit at a point where control of the House and the Senate may go to Democratic hands in a matter of weeks. Will that change the dynamic on this?
Yeah, I look at this a little differently. I look at this president as a failed president. And you can't sustain a war if the public's not for it. It's not sustainable. And the number of troops we have sending them back over and over, the public is turned against us. So in the end, if the Congress becomes Democratic, I think we have a unique time in history here that the Congress, Democratic, both Senate and House, can deal with the president from a basis of power, where the president's going to have to compromise on these things. He's not going to be able to continue. He doesn't want to have a failed president. He wants to leave a legacy of something. Most people don't think he can get him to compromise. I believe that if we deal from a basis of power, that we can get him to compromise. I think we can end this tragic situation that's dealing there. I think the Iraqis know where the bombers are. They know who they are, but they're afraid because of the hostility towards the Americans to tell anybody. They'll tell each other, and they'll get rid of the bombers. You won't see the bombers after we're gone. So I'm convinced that a Democratic Congress is absolutely essential to just like the senator said, to balance this thing out and to start a redeployment, a sensible, responsible redeployment out of Iraq, where Iran wants us there, China wants us there, Russia wants us there in order to deplete our resources. These young folks there are going to be paying the price and the taxes on this thing for the rest of their life.
It's extended excerpts from our town hall event, Should We Get Out of Iraq, on WNYC. In a minute, Carafano and McGovern debate U.N. troops, and George McGovern addresses his landslide defeat on an anti-war platform in 1972 and its relevance for the elections this fall. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. It's our 2006 election series, 30 issues in 30 days, a special edition today, issue 18, Should We Get Out of Iraq? Extended excerpts from the event I moderated at Town Hall, built around the new book by George McGovern and William Polk, Out of Iraq, and the related article in the October issue of Harper's. We pick it up with a challenge to Senator McGovern from James Carafano of the conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation.
Let me just touch on the military piece, because of all of them, actually, it's the one that I find the most disturbing, which is, you know, let's get a 15,000-man stability force in there, okay? People have to realize what that means in military terms. If I'm going to deploy 15,000 soldiers to a country, how many of those soldiers are going to be out walking, doing security? The answer is, if you're lucky, about 1 in 3. In America, it's about 1 in 7. So if you have 15,000 soldiers in a country, at best, that means you've got 500 trigger pullers, because all the rest are driving trucks and doing logistics and everything else. Last time I checked, there are 24 hours in a day. Soldiers don't work 24 hours. If you're going to do sustained continuous operations, the kind of security things that Bill talked about, that means you're going to probably have 3 shifts. That means, at best, if you deploy 15,000 peacekeepers to Iraq on a typical day, because people are going to be sick and they're going to get injured, and they're going to go AWOL, you're going to be lucky to have 150 soldiers out on the street. Now, this is a country of 25 million people the size of California. Putting 15,000 soldiers in Iraq doesn't do anything. All it does is it basically puts those 15,000 soldiers at terrible risk to being held hostage by somebody. No, sir. I'm sorry. He said 15,000. If you put 15,000 troops in Iraq, you'll probably have about 150 in the streets.
Hang on. Come on, folks. You know what? Let's give Senator McGovern a chance to respond to that. Is that terribly inadequate? And will those troops just be simply at risk? Our 150,000 troops or whatever it is are still terribly at risk.
First of all, they're not going there as soldiers. They're going as police officers. Bill Clinton talked about putting 100,000 more police men on the street. They weren't soldiers. They were people who were trained law enforcement people, and they're not going to take on the insurgency. It's not the job that our Army is now engaged in, which is trying to put down this insurgency. The insurgency, we believe, will evaporate once the cause of it is taken care of. The cause of the insurgency is a foreign army that has been in the middle of Iraq for 3.5 years now. Even Richard Perle, one of the original brass-knuckled neoconservatives, says that we probably, after deposing of Saddam 3.5 years ago, we probably should not have kept our army there beyond that length of time. But if you can get that kind of recommendation from Richard Perle, it's not entirely radical for Bill Polk and I and Congressman Murthy and others to say the time has come to get this occupying force out of there, if it was a mistake to leave them there 3.5 years ago. No?
Well, Senator, I don't disagree with you. I just don't understand what 150 police officers are going to do in a country of 25 million people. What's their purpose?
The Iraqi government presumably has other people that will serve as police officers. This is something to supplement.
The Iraqi already has over 100,000 soldiers. I mean, what is 15,000 peacekeepers, 100 people, 50 people on the street? What are they going to provide? I don't understand.
They're there to arrest people who break the law. They're not to take on the insurgency.
But how many people are they going to arrest? 150 people?
It's not 150, it's 15,000.
Which will put about 150 people in the street, and they'll operate, sir, they will, and they'll operate in squads of, wait a second, they'll operate in squads of 10. If they go out and arrest one person, those 10 people will come off the street for their tour, so now you're down to 140 people. If they arrest two people, you're down to 130. So, I mean, 150 people isn't even enough to secure a Baghdad neighborhood.
Would you be happier? Would you be happier if...
Let's listen to Senator McGovern.
I'm wondering if you'd be happier if we didn't keep these 15,000 people there during a transition period. Would it make you feel better if we said we wouldn't do that?
I wouldn't put 15,000 peacekeepers at risk with an impractical mission, no.
Well, the police officers in Iraq are at risk, or the police officers here in New York, people who become policemen.
That's their country, and their job to defend their country.
Right.
I wouldn't put 15,000 peace officers in the middle of Iraq. It's not a practical mission, and they would just be at risk.
So, Senator McGovern, here's a question for you from the audience that asks, how do we rebuild when we have not been able to rebuild to date and production of oil and electricity are below pre-war levels.
Well, it is very hard to rebuild in the middle of a war, and we would argue that the best way to reduce the dimensions of that is to take the American army out of there. I continue to believe, based on everything I've studied and read and the conversations I've had with men like Dr. Polk, that we didn't have an insurgency in Iraq until we put the American army into the middle of their country. And so that's a basic fact that's when the insurgency began and began to make itself felt in the life of the people there. So there's no way that either Bill Polk or I or anyone else can tell what's going to happen to Iraq once we leave. We don't even hint that we think we know exactly what's going to happen. Neither do we know, and no one can answer this, what's going to happen if we stay. What is happening is that every day Americans are dying and Iraqis are dying, and the country is being ravaged by this insurgency. It's our hope and our belief that that insurgency will gradually disappear if the American army is taken out of there. I've been thinking tonight about Vietnam a lot, sitting next here to a Vietnam veteran, Congressman Murtha. We were told year after year during that long 20-year American involvement in Vietnam that it may have been a mistake, but we can't pull out now, or there would be a bloodbath in that country of just untold dimensions. The Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese government would simply slaughter everybody who had sided with us in the war. The second thing that would happen is that one country after another in that vicinity would topple to communism as so many dominoes. Neither of those things happened. Once we got our army out of Vietnam, one of the bloodiest wars in memory, almost overnight, the Vietnamese became our friends. I was there 3 or 4 years ago. We were warmly treated, not because I was a critic of the war, but because almost every Vietnamese we talked to told us that they had never had anything against the American people. It was our political leaders that brought on that war. And as I say, the Vietnamese have been our friends ever since we left their country. Nor did any countries next door fall to communism. You had this madman in Cambodia, Pol Pot, who was systematically slaughtering his own people. And guess what country went in and stopped that? Hanoi and a part of the Vietnamese army that moved in, took Pol Pot out of power and stopped that genocide. They probably should have had the Nobel Peace Prize for doing that. But in any event, we are convinced that if we're ever going to stop this slaughter now going on in Iraq, the first step is to get our army out of there.
Senator McGovern, before we go, I'm sorry to raise this. I know you've been asked a zillion times, but you are a symbol to many Democratic strategists of how not to get elected during wartime. And maybe we saw that fear in the way the Democrats ran away from Congressman Murtha's resolution when it was actually introduced in the House. I know he's very frustrated with that. Anything you want to say to Democrats in Congress or running for Congress who might even be cringing at the idea of you and Murtha on the same stage for a photo op?
Well, since politicians are prone to do this, they might take a look at the polls in this country, which shows a steadily decreasing support for continuing the war. I do a lot of moving around the country. I still do a lot of speaking. But I talk to people in hotel lobbies, in airplane terminals, on the street, in various places. What I find is increasingly the political view is that the war was a mistake. We never should have gone to Iraq. Pretty much the consensus that now exists, towards the Vietnam War. Just about every American you encounter thinks it was a mistake. And the sticking part is they will then say, but I don't know how to get out. I don't know how we just walk out of there. What's going to happen then? Is there going to be a big bloodbath or a huge civil war? As I look at it, I think there's a civil war going on right now in Iraq. And I think the best way to begin the process of working down that civil war is what I think we pretty much agree on here tonight. We need to find a way to turn over power to the Iraqi people. And that's not going to happen as long as we have 140,000 U.S. troops over there. We're going to be the dominant factor, and we're going to be the target. And I think you'll find in this book, we're not deserting Iraq. We're not deserting our troops. We're trying as best we can, as people that are old enough to know something about what war does and some of the things that can go wrong, and then to come up with a sensible answer.
Extended excerpts from our Harper's Magazine WNYC event, Should We Get Out of Iraq?, a special edition today of our series, 30 Issues in 30 Days. If you're interested, you can see a television broadcast of this event. It will air tonight at 7:30 on CUNY TV. That's Channel 75 on the New York City cable systems. You can also listen to the entire unedited forum on our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. You can also click on that easily on the WNYC e-newsletter that you may have received in your inbox yesterday. Tomorrow, Issue 19, Will Your Vote Be Counted? Talk to you then, Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.